Hello guys, and welcome back to Tales from Wisteria Lane, the podcast where we give you a fair view of all things Desperate Housewives. I'm Joel.
I'm Billy Ray.
And today we will be discussing Season 7, Episode 18, Moments in the Woods. So I will be doing the overview of the episode and B will be doing the trivia. So do you have anything to start us off?
Yes. So this episode was written by John Paul Bullock III and directed by David Grossman, and it first aired on the 17th of April 2011. On this day, the number one song in the US was, again, E.T. by Katy Perry featuring Kanye West, and the number one in the UK was Party Rock Anthem by LMFAO, Lauren Bennett, and Goon Rock.
Oh.
Do you remember that song?
I mean, I remember the song. I don't remember the others being part of it. I only remember LMFAO.
So in this week, which was Monday the 11th of April to the 17th of April, on the 11th of April, the Minsk metro bombing in Belarus killed at least 15 people and injured over 200. So we're back at it again with all the terrorism.
Yeah.
On the 15th of April, in the US, the indictment United States versus Scheinberg passed, shutting down Black Friday for online poker sites, accusing companies of fraud and money laundering.
Well, I do think it abuses people with gambling addictions.
Yep.
So I'm all for that.
Predatory behavior.
Yeah.
And Christina Aguilera, at the age of 29, divorced music executive Jordan Bratman at the age of 33 due to
irreconcilable.
That's it. Differences after 5 years of marriage.
Christina Aguilera.
Some people really care about celebrities and their marriages.
Yeah, I'm not fussed about their marriages.
On the 17th of April, Game of Thrones, based on the A Song of Ice and Fire fantasy novels by George R.R. Martin, premiered on HBO.
No way.
Yeah.
And I missed it all. Like, I was like seasons and seasons behind before I started watching it. I remember when me and B first got together and I was like, that was what we were talking about when we first started talking, was Game of Thrones.
Oh yeah, because you were messaging me while I was at work and you were like, I've just gotten to this episode. And in my head, I was like, that's the Red Wedding episode. Oh my God.
Yeah, it was the Red Wedding. I wasn't prepared for it.
And also on the 17th of April, Thor, directed by Kenneth Branagh, starring Chris Hemsworth and Natalie Portman, premiered in Sydney, Australia.
Oh my God, Thor premiered the same day as Game of Thrones.
Yes, one of those things is more loved than the other.
Yes.
The title of this episode comes from the song of the same name taken from the Stephen Sondheim musical, Into the Woods.
Into the Woods.
Unlike most episodes of the show, the majority of scenes do not take place on Wisteria Lane.
Mm.
Bree delivers her signature muffins to Carlos at the end of the episode. This is the second time she's offered muffins to a neighbor this season.
Yes, the first one was Beth, right?
I love that trivia.
That was fun trivia. That was good, yeah.
Felicia tricks Paul by giving him an urn filled with dust rather than ashes, similar to how Lynette tricked Ida Greenberg's family in Welcome to Kanagawa.
That's true. That is true. She swaps it for, like, fireplace dust or Hoover dust or something, doesn't she?
I guess the writers just really think that's funny.
The writers do have a habit, no offense to the writers if they're listening, even though I highly doubt that they are, but they do have a habit of repetitive storylines.
It is revealed in this episode that Paul still owns all the houses he previously bought earlier in the season, despite the fact that he no longer needs them.
Yeah.
But, you know, mm-hmm. you don't sell houses in, like, a week.
No, you certainly do not. It is a process.
This episode ends a streak of 21 episodes for the series that all bill at least one special guest star, the biggest streak the show's had, which started with the episode A Little Night Music. Coincidentally, both that episode and this only bill one special guest star, former series regular Sean Pyfrom, who plays Andrew.
Yeah.
And that's all my trivia.
Okay, that was some good trivia.
Thanks, love.
You're welcome. So, previously on Desperate Housewives, Tom got a job offer that Lynette just could not refuse.
Yep.
Susan made a new friend at dialysis called Dick. Beth took her life, meaning Susan has now got her kidney, and Felicia has been released from prison for, like, humanitarian release or whatever it's called.
Yeah, in the last episode, we actually mentioned Dick because he was saying to Susan how when we get good news, someone gets bad news, which is why he's not chipper.
Yeah.
And I think that particular theme was there on purpose to remind us of Dick for this episode.
Maybe, yeah. And finally, Andrew admits his alcohol addiction after his husband left him.
That was rough.
That was rough. That was a rough one for the gays. So let's start with Susan. So Susan is having another checkup with the doctor after her surgery that she's essentially recovered from very quickly. Like, she's able to walk and drive and very nearly have sex. Like, they've just, I guess the writers just didn't even want one episode of Susan stuck in a bed again.
I suppose once you've given birth, you can do anything.
True. So she tells the doctor that she's about to go to the dialysis center to visit her friend Dick, but apparently there's no need because he is in the hospital now. Susan is very fully recovered. Everything's good with the kidney now. She's now got Beth's kidney. It's all sorted. So Susan's kidney story is now out the window.
Yeah, we skipped way past any recovery.
We really did. So Susan goes into Dick's room to check on him, and it appears their friendship has grown a lot off screen again.
Yeah, and it is really strange because it was hinted at that they'd become friends, but we didn't see any of it. No. So this is the first time we've ever seen them get along.
Yeah. He asks Susan if she knows anyone else who's willing to off themselves to give a kidney, and Ned tells her that she's the luckiest girl alive right now and that she should take advantage of it by gambling, and he promises to take her to the casino when he gets out of here, but she tells him she isn't really a casino kind of gal and she's more of like a poker at the dining room table with her friends kind of gal.
Yeah, that was concerning advice from Dick.
What?
You know, like, you're on a win. Go gamble.
Well, yeah,
that's
but
how it starts.
To be fair, that is how it starts. That is how it gets you. So Susan then goes back to the hospital to visit Dick the next day, I'm assuming. But his nephew is there packing up his things and lets Susan know that Dick died last night.
Mm.
Apparently, he didn't tell anyone how sick he really was. So they make their introductions, and it turns out that Dick left something for Susan, which is a $100 chip, which essentially is for the casino. And it's actually, this is the really sad scene that gets me quite sad. There's another scene later on, but this one gets me quite sad. Not because Dick is dead, because we saw him twice, really. So it's got nothing to do with Dick, but it's because of Wally's line, like Wally's Dick's nephew. And he basically just says, he was always bugging me to go to that casino with him, and now I wish I'd gone. And it's just that line.
It's human nature. It's one of those things. People die and then you're like, I wish I saw them more, or oh my God, they really wanted to do this with me. And I said no.
It's because you naturally don't like to think of mortality. As a human, we don't like to think of mortality. We don't like to consider it. And we always tell ourselves we've got all the time in the world, which is how we get so bogged down with the mundane, the day-to-day minutiae of life, which really isn't that important in the grand scheme of things.
It just goes to show guilt is not just for the Catholics.
No, it's not. It's for all of us. Catholics just like to make it about them. So Susan takes this moment now to decide that she is going to go to the casino for her friend. So she walks into the casino and she bumps into Roy, who apparently comes here once a week. Karen gives him 50 quid, tells him to blow it or double it, and probably just to get him out of the house so she can get some peace and quiet.
Yes, and I'm glad that she only gives him 50 so that he can't go into debt, I suppose.
Yeah, like 50 quid a week, sure, that's your limit. You either come home with 100 or you come home with nothing.
Yeah.
But like... And so Susan and Roy have a little bit of a chat, and Roy ends up calling some random woman a slut.
Yeah, pretty much.
Mishearing, obviously, because he's old. And then Susan walks off to try the poker room.
Yeah, Roy being here was random.
No, but it's obviously, it's set up for the next
it
lot
is.
Of scenes, isn't it? But it's also not so unbelievable.
No, it makes complete sense of his character.
Yeah.
Like, if I think about anyone on the lane, it's going to be Roy.
Roy tries to warn her about the poker room, saying it's just, you know, a bunch of stuffs in there and, you know, it's not worth it, blah, blah, blah. But Susan, she knows poker. So she's going in. She's going to do it. So Roy, a bit later on, enters the poker room and is surprised to find that so far, Susan has won $6,000.
Yeah, nuts.
She bets it all and he tries to stop her but is forbidden by the poker people.
It's a bit crazy. All in.
Yeah, she's just like, I'm all in. She hasn't even picked her cards up off the table. They're just there. And she's like, I'm all in. Roy tries to stop it, is forbidden. And it's a good thing that he is forbidden because she won again.
Yes.
And she then more than doubles her winnings.
Yeah.
So she then cries because she's won. And then the poker people think she's weird because apparently she's been crying every time she wins.
This is such a Susan story.
It really is.
Like, it's the emotions are so complicated and it's so well done.
Mm.
But also, only Susan could cry at actually winning.
Winning 12 grand with the medical bills and the money problems they're having.
As in,
surely this is going to really help as well.
She's the kind of lady who really needs money and she's on a winning streak and it's good and it's good. And then she's like, oh, I don't deserve this. Ah.
Yeah, give it away then, girl. So Susan starts crying. She's left alone at the poker table, her and Roy. Anyway, the poker people get up because they're sick of Susan's emotions. Emotions don't belong in a casino, I guess. And so Roy is then confused as to why Susan is crying, because her friend will be so happy that she's won so much money for him. And so she explains that her friend is dead. And he died yesterday. And she doesn't get why she keeps winning whilst everyone else is dying. And again, this is another very sad scene, because it's sort of arguing against morality and why me and not them, and what makes me deserving of a life and this other person not deserving.
Yeah, realizing how unfair life can be.
Yeah.
It's a bummer.
Roy gives her a historical tidbit from his life in the war, where he nearly died, but the bullet hit his friend just behind him instead. And then when Roy ended up asking his sergeant or whatever, his superior in the army, as to why it was his friend and not him, then his superior basically just said, why ask? It happens just because it is the way it is. It's random. There's no rhyme or reason. And that's what Roy is trying to get into Susan. Don't weigh yourself down on this why me, why not them mentality.
Yes, it's great to think philosophically, but sometimes you do need that mentality of why ask, so that you can just move on and live your life.
Yeah, otherwise you're just weighed down by it. You're weighed down by the guilt, you're weighed down by the trauma, you're weighed down by the thought of it all, and it's you're never going to get anywhere in life.
Exactly. I quite liked this story.
I really liked the message behind this story.
Susan was very Susan about it, but I did like it, and it was funny.
Yeah, also, but that's why it's funny, because Susan is very Susan about it.
I'm not going to give away anything, because we don't do spoilers for future episodes, but this gives me very season 8 Susan, like a very early glimpse of season 8 Susan.
Yeah.
Like all the way through season 8.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The crying.
Absolutely.
The guilt, the questioning.
Yeah. Anyway, so that is Susan's story. Fairly sad, great message. Now we'll move on to Lynette's.
Mm-hmm.
Tom comes home late, telling Lynette that he was called into legal, which makes her nervous until she finds out that it was just so he could get his 100 grand signing bonus.
Yeah, now this is crazy to me, because I shouldn't be surprised, because it happened, you hear about it all the time, but it's like the higher up you go in the business world, the easier it is to get money for not doing anything.
He's literally got 100k for essentially signing a contract.
Right, they're like, you joined the company, well done, here's 10 grand.
So they discuss what to do with it, and Lynette wants to be very sensible, you know, put some in the kids' college fund, start a retirement fund for them, and what have you. But Tom tells her that they can do all of that with 90 grand, but he wants her to spoil herself with 10 grand, because this is his way of essentially saying, you're the reason that I've got this.
You know, I kind of love Tom in this moment.
I do love Tom. Yeah. I love Tom in this moment. I'd give anything for you to come home with 100 grand and be like, you know what, spend 10k on yourself.
But as the businessman, that's your job.
I know.
But I've never related more to Lynette than I did in this scene. The husband comes home with all this money and she's like, oh my God, retirement, savings, college fund. And that's literally me.
Insurance, all of this sort of stuff.
So. But it's nice that he's like, look, this is a minute sum out of the whole thing, but it's enough for you to really get something nice.
Oh yeah, absolutely. 10 grand is probably nothing like Lynette has seen for a very, very long time.
Yeah, and 90 grand put away towards the serious stuff is nothing to
moan about.
Exactly.
At all.
Love
absolutely
that.
Not. So Lynette then wants to celebrate by going out to dinner with Tom, which he agrees to, but not tonight. He's got tons of work, and they arrange for a Friday night instead. At poker, the ladies are having fun. Well, Susan is having fun because she's on a lucky streak and she keeps winning. This is before the casino scene, but also before the crying as well.
Yeah, this is Susan on her winning streak, but happy about it.
Yeah. So Lynette then interrupts and asks the ladies to point out what's different, but nobody really seems to notice anything until Lynette points out that she's just bought herself a grind and brew coffee master. And we have a clip.
Tom gave me part of his signing bonus and said, go crazy. So I bought a grind and brew coffee master. Wasn't even on sale. Check me out.
Shall I say it?
No, please. Allow me. You're pathetic.
You finally get a little mad money and you buy a kitchen appliance?
But I don't really need anything. Oh, honey, look around. You need everything. Well, it's hard for me. Tom's only had this job a month. I'm used to clipping coupons and buying in bulk. I even color my own hair.
Ah, mystery solved.
Hey!
How did you let this happen?
Don't look at me like that. I tried. I tried for years. I couldn't even get her out of flip-flops.
Okay, so I have things to say.
Go on, get them out.
Now, I know I've already said this, but now I mean it more. I've never related more to Lynette than I have in this scene.
Yeah.
when she gets all this money and she spends it on a kitchen appliance so that she can have one nice thing.
That is very like, you.
Oh, I would do that. A coffee machine.
And then everyone calls you out. And those would literally be Bee's words, but I don't really need anything.
Yeah, I say that all the time.
And then I'm the one that has to sit there and say, honey, look around, we need everything.
Joel is Renee and Gabby in this scene because Joel would be like, well, you can start by buying some fucking clothes.
Yeah.
Like, that'd be absolutely.
I'm like, you can buy some clothes that fit.
Yeah, you'd be like, let's get you out of those bleach stained jeans. Yeah. Let's get rid of the frumpy dumpy jumpers. Like, I know what you're like.
I feel very much like Gabby in this scene because I've tried so hard to get my friend Amy out of flip-flops and it has not worked.
Ugh, move on from the flip-flops, babe.
I can't. They're the worst invention that humans have ever done. And that's up there with the nuclear bomb, all right? Oppenheimer who? I don't know. But someone needs to make a movie about the person that created and invented the flip-flop.
Me and Joel are a bit different when it comes to money spending, though, because I just don't feel like buying things if I don't need them. Whereas Joel's like, oh, we could really replace this TV, or we could really replace this sofa. And I'm like, but the TV works.
He says that, but we literally needed a new TV. The remote didn't even work, and I was getting fed up with having to get up to change the volume.
Yeah, but let's not forget that those were the only steps that you'd get sometimes.
Yes, they were, and I was fed up with them.
Okay.
And I would have to climb up those steps to get into the flat.
Point is, the TV worked. Okay.
the TV worked, except some of the pixels were also starting to go, we needed a new TV. B would literally be perfectly happy if there was one pixel left on that massive TV screen. And he's like, well, it still works.
I mean, the dead pixel and then its subsequent little brother, it gave it character.
No, I'm sorry. I'm very much on it. The minute something is starting to fail me, I get it gone. I don't have time for anything that doesn't add joy to my life. Hashtag Marie Kondo.
That TV would have to be on fire for me to have gotten rid of it if you weren't around.
But I have got a lot better with my own personal spending. I don't buy as many clothes anymore. I'm a lot better with the clothing that I do have in sort of like, I don't need it. I've got plenty of clothing because my mentality is we're about to get a mortgage.
Yeah, true.
So my priority now is making sure that we aren't homeless.
And you know what? We still sold that piece of crap for £40.
We did, which was more. See, B's good in that sense. If I don't want it, I just want it gone. I really don't want to have to look at it. I don't want to have to deal with the rigmarole, take it to the dump, whatever. But B is very, we'll get some money for this. And he will be patient in trying to find a buyer for something that I deem completely, like, utterly worthless.
That's because you think no one will buy it. And I know what people do on Facebook Marketplace.
So, at the store, Renee gives a verbal bitch slap to the judgy sales lady who really thinks she's filming a scene from Pretty Woman.
I wrote that exact same thing.
The sales lady runs out to grab Renee and Lynette food and coffee whilst the ladies go shopping. And Renee teaches her the value of expensive clothes that you just don't technically need. So Renee is doing a very good job at teaching Lynette. So good that Lynette leaves, actually dictating what time the shop opens tomorrow.
Yeah, Lynette.
Which I didn't appreciate.
Nor did I, but Lynette really got into that fantasy.
She really did get into that fantasy.
However, I'm not a fan of these high-heeled brown boots that make her look like a femme fatale cowboy.
I loved them. Although, love a brown boot.
Now that I've said femme fatale cowboy, that does sound cool.
It does sound cool. It's like if Calamity Jane got sexy.
And I cannot. I'm sorry. I know what's going on. I know what Renee's doing. But $500 on jeans is just criminal.
But you saw the ass that comes with them.
I don't care. That's much money.
You should see the ass that comes with a $900 pair.
The amount of cool stuff you could get with $10,000 and she spends it all on overpriced clothes. You are not the best person to mind
you're
about
not,
this.
You're not talking to the right audience with me here. So it's Friday night and Lynette has the romantic celebratory dinner all prepared for Tom, complete with beautiful dress and ice bucket for the champagne, which impresses Renee.
Mm-hmm.
Lynette calls Tom to find out when he'll be home, but it turns out he's now got an urgent meeting in Montreal and so they will have to reschedule.
But it's sex night.
It is sex night.
She's got matching underwear.
Yeah, her bra matches her panties.
Oh my god, Renee's face in the background like, oh my god.
Lynette is disappointed, but Renee warns her that this will happen more often now, the bigger he gets, but she's got the clothes and the jewels instead, so, you know, it kind of balances itself out.
I mean, it's basically the story that Gabby and Carlos had previously, but now it's with Tom and Lynette, so we're seeing a slightly different side to it.
Yeah, and Renee's already been there, done that.
Yeah.
She had Doug Perry as her husband, and look how that ended.
I guess Mike's the only one that it won't happen to.
So Tom is on his private jet when Lynette walks on with dinner. Apparently the pilot's been distracted by money for 30 minutes so that they could have a bit of time together.
Oh my God, this is such a Lynette thing to do.
It really is a Lynette thing to do.
When Lynette doesn't get her way, she always takes things into her own hands.
So Tom finds this sweet, but apparently he needs all the time to prep for the meeting. And as much as Lynette wanted him to have fun, he's already having fun and he loves his job and doesn't really need Lynette right now. So she can disappear home until he's sad and bored again.
You know, I actually quite love this moment for Tom, though. The fact that he is loving the job, like, good for him.
Yeah, it's good.
But Lynette looks so good in the sparkly black dress that it also makes me a bit sad.
I mean, it's nice that Tom has found a job that he really enjoys, but he's found jobs that he really enjoys before and then he gets bored.
But baby, it's his dream to be in finance while on a private jet and preparing for a meeting that's in half an hour. It's his season 7 dream.
I feel like he's doing what he always does, which is he pushes Lynette to the side because he's found something that he really enjoys and so he's living it up. But the minute he gets bored and wants to leave it, he will run back to Lynette.
Yeah, I can see that coming. I just like that he's taken this seriously.
Yeah.
I think it's a really nice change. And then she has to do a little sad walk off with her lobsters.
Yeah, that was really sad. Imagine paying the pilot to leave it for 30 minutes so you can go have sex on a plane. And then the pilot sees you walk out no less than 5 minutes later.
Right. I'd give him one of the lobsters.
Oh, that's so depressing. So that is Lynette's story.
Yeah, Lynette is getting sad because of the ramifications of her own actions.
Which happens all the time.
Yeah, same with Gabby when she did this to Carlos.
It happens all the damn time. So, okay, we'll move on to Paul and Felicia next. Paul notices that the door to one of his houses on the lane is wide open, and so he storms in telling whoever is inside to get the hell out, and it turns out it's Felicia. Paul is gagged, obviously. He wasn't made aware that Felicia had been given release, but it turns out that the house isn't Paul's, it's hers. And in an attempt to hide his plan when buying all the houses on the lane, he bought this particular house in Beth's name. And since Felicia was the sole inheritor to Beth's will, the house is now hers.
Oh, Paul, that's embarrassing.
Yeah.
I think one of the funniest parts of this scene as well is not just how bad the missing fingers look, like the effect wasn't good, but just Paul saying, what makes you think they'll want a manipulative psycho for a neighbour? And then she's like, popcorn the kettle black.
Yeah, she's like, well, they let you live here, so I'm going to assume the zoning laws aren't all that strict.
Yeah, these two, the banter is a bit sharp.
Yeah, it is. It's quick. It's quick-witter banter between the two of them. Paul basically doesn't believe that the people on the street would want a crazy lady there, but Felicia doesn't care because she will have her daughter with her, and she pulls out Beth's ashes that she stole from the mausoleum. But she does say that Paul is always welcome to visit.
Yeah, and she also says she didn't really steal them. She kind of talked them in to give them to her.
She reminded the mausoleum of her rights as the parent of the deceased.
Yeah, yeah.
Later on, Felicia pops by Paul's to apologise to him for how she behaved the other day, telling him that old habits just die hard.
I can instantly smell manipulation.
Yeah. Paul asks if Felicia was planning to give Beth's ashes back, but she doesn't believe either of them should have them. She thinks they should scatter them at a lake just north of here where Beth enjoyed going as a young girl. Paul is confused as to why she is inviting him, but Felicia believes it's what Beth would have wanted, and also she's got nowhere to get there yet because she doesn't have a car.
Yeah, and I love the way in this scene she says, shall I make her some sandwiches? And then Paul very rightly is like, I'll make my own sandwiches, thanks.
Yeah, Paul's not quite ready to trust Felicia yet, so he's not going to eat any food that she gives him. Foreshadowing a little bit, I think.
Maybe, but like, I don't think that this is how Felicia would kill him at a lake. Come on.
On the drive to the lake, Paul and Felicia have a lovely time discussing what Beth would think if she could see them now. So Felicia thinks she'd be glad to see it, finally, as in Beth would be glad to see it. And she asks Paul if she suffered, to which he assumes that she means Beth, and he says that he doesn't know, but Felicia actually meant her sister Martha.
Awkward.
Really awkward. She just brazenly brings it up, and she's like, I know you were there for that one. Like,
yeah.
Paul, of course, doesn't admit to anything, just in case the bitch is wearing a wire, but despite that, Felicia still claims that she isn't wearing the wire, and she still believes that Paul killed Martha.
Yes, because he did.
He did. He did. And credit to Felicia for sticking to her guns.
Yes.
Felicia claims that doing this event together will hopefully put a stop to the cycle of hate that has enveloped them. And Paul agrees while sneakily grabbing his gun.
Yeah. And it is. She does make a good point about, you know, it gives vibes of the circle of violence, the circle of vengeance, and how it never ends and it leads to no good. And other people continue it when you're gone, you know?
Yeah.
But it's just bollocks. And it's so funny because she says it and she's probably like, yeah, I've probably got a good point here, but I'm still going to carry on.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So they're finding a nice spot to scatter the ashes, and Paul is getting fed up with Felicia talking to the urn. He then tells her that he doesn't believe that this situation right now will actually fix anything, and Felicia admits that she knows about the gun and pulls it out of her pocket.
Yeah, I don't know how she got that off him.
Because prison taught her girl some tricks.
Yeah.
So she holds Paul at gunpoint, talking to him about the cycle of anger and trust and how you can't really trust someone who doesn't trust you. And so Paul brings a gun, Felicia steals it. He then tries to calm her down, but there is no need because she just throws the gun into the lake in an attempt to end things.
She's playing the long game.
She is playing the long game.
She's trying to gain trust.
Yeah. She wants, what she wants is for Paul to start thinking that Felicia doesn't care anymore,
mm-hmm.
and she's ready to move on.
That's why she keeps spouting all the rubbish about the circle of violence.
Yeah. They come home and Felicia walks through the door talking to someone, and it turns out it's Beth's ashes. She swapped them with Hoover dust, so Paul would think that they scattered her, which is just pure evil.
Yeah, but it also means that she spent the whole day talking to Hoover dust.
Which is
hilarious. She's committed. She was really in character.
She is literally committed. Committed to the role.
You won't see me doing that when I'm taking the bins out.
She tells Beth not to worry about Paul, and she will get her revenge, and Paul will die slowly and painfully.
Yeah.
So that is Paul and Felicia's story, building on a little bit more. So, Bree and Gabby's story joined together because it links very closely together. So we start the episode with a flashback montage of how Bree handled her alcoholism and the 12-step program. And it was really lovely to see early Bree again. I will say that. She had the old Bree hair with the Bree flicks.
Yeah.
Which was lovely to see. It was very fun.
That's sort of like 50s hairdo.
Yeah. So she got rid of all the alcohol in the house, prayed, and made a list of everyone that she'd harmed. And back in the present day, Bree is very happy to see that Andrew has followed those same steps so well, and he is now 30 days sober.
Yes. Now, earlier we did say about how they skipped Susan's recovery period. It's because it's been 30 days.
Yeah.
So that's why, guys.
Apparently, Andrew stalled out at step 8, which is the list-making step, but it wasn't necessarily the making of the list that he struggled with. It was the having to make amends for the people on the list. So Bree believes that Andrew is on about her and implies that if he asks for forgiveness, it will be given. But Andrew just finds this hilarious because Bree isn't number one. She's like 7th.
I thought that was funny too, because when I saw the scene, I thought he would have to make amends for the people he hurt when he would be drunk during like this period of his life. And I thought, why would Bree be so high up? Why would she think that? That's such a Bree thing to think.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a bit more to it, which comes up later. But at the time, I was like, Bree, why would you be number one?
Yeah, I think it's more, I'm not really sure how it works. I think it's just everybody that you feel you need to make amends to in your life in general that you have harmed.
Yeah.
Anyway, Andrew is on about someone else local. He's on about Carlos and the fact that he murdered Carlos's mother, which he didn't. But we will get into that. Bree is horrified at this thought and goes to stop him. And that's basically that scene. I don't know why I paused, acting like I was about to say more.
Yeah, it's necessary for his recovery, but yeah. I can see why Bree is skeptical about this plan.
It makes me sad that Andrew goes the whole show believing he killed someone. There is never a moment in this show where Andrew gets his rightful information, which he didn't kill Juanita. Yes, he hit her and he put her into a coma, but she awoke from that coma and it was the negligence of the hospital that killed Juanita.
Well, this might sound harsh, but he doesn't deserve that information. He hit her and he drove off. He is responsible for her death, even if she woke up and fell down the stairs.
I don't necessarily agree that he's responsible for her death.
The negligence... wouldn't be there if it wasn't for him.
No, she wouldn't be there if it wasn't for him, but she also wouldn't have fallen down the stairs if the hospital had put a wet floor sign down.
Yeah, no, but I still think he has apologising to do.
Of course he has apologising to do, but but when you didn't kill a person, that isn't information that you should have weighing on your shoulders. You shouldn't be walking around the world believing that you killed a person when you didn't.
Yeah, but it's a technicality that's not really going to make you feel that relieved at the end of the day.
I disagree. I completely disagree. I really feel like this would bring relief to a person that is walking around believing they've killed someone. Their own actions have directly killed a person, but no. Actually, that's not the case. And yes, what you did was terrible, and you drink driving, and you did put someone in grave harm's way. You put her in a coma. You should be taking responsibility for that. But the woman's death is not something that you should be taking responsibility for.
I don't think he'll ever know.
No, he won't. He never does, and it really upsets me.
No one's ever going to find out about that.
So Andrew goes to tell Carlos, but Bree stops him in the street, reminding him that the step isn't to be done if being honest will cause harm to them or others. And Bree believes that Carlos will certainly hurt others if he finds out about this.
Funnily enough, this scene is quite funny because she's barely even stage whispering. Carlos is right there and she's like, you cannot tell him that you killed his mother.
But sound only really carries in a small room, and you're out in like an open area. They're in the street.
A very quiet street.
Well, yeah.
No, there's no, it's Wisteria Lane.
So Carlos comes over, probably because he heard Bree, but Bree manages to control the conversation, and she thanks Carlos for how good a friend he was when Rex died, almost like a surrogate father. And gay jokes aside, it does sound like Carlos was lovely to Andrew.
Even the gay joke was lovely, though.
Yeah.
It wasn't offensive.
No, it wasn't offensive. It was just, if I knew you'd be gay, I'd have taken you to some musicals. Ha ha ha, because all gays love musicals.
I mean, they do. It was in good humour. And it was actually a really nice scene, that part.
So Andrew chickens out in the end. So Gabby goes for a jog and stops at Bree's to tell her that Andrew has gone hunting with Carlos, for old time's sake. Bree is, of course, freaked out and runs inside to call Andrew. And inside, Bree has told Gabby what Andrew intends to do, but they can't get through to him because there's no reception up in the mountains.
Yeah, and they're staying there overnight in a cabin, small cabin with guns.
Gabby then starts to panic because Carlos will kill Andrew and go to jail for murder and get extra time because it would be a hate crime, and it would then be the third gay person that Carlos has attacked in his time in Desperate Housewives.
Yeah, oh, that old joke.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And so they decide to head up there, but Bree runs upstairs to grab a gun first, just in case.
Yeah, you know, if it weren't for the confession about being responsible for his mother's death, it'd sound like quite a sexy scenario.
It still sounds sexy to me.
Andrew,
hold me up at gunpoint, please.
Andrew and Carlos in the woods, in a cabin?
Yeah.
It's probably on one of those gay fan fictions that you were coming across at some point.
It probably is. We had Andrew and Tom.
That was weird.
That was weird, especially because the image they used of Andrew was young Andrew. So it was inappropriate. But they could have used an older Andrew picture and it would have worked fine. But yeah. So Bree and Gabby make it to the cabin where Carlos is cleaning up blood and Andrew isn't around, and they immediately think the worst. And we have a clip.
Bree, Gabby, what are you doing here?
He's not here. Where's Andrew?
He's hiking over by the cliffs.
In the rain?
Well, it wasn't raining when he left. Why'd you two come all the way out here?
We were worried about Andrew.
Because he got his medicine. So when is he going to be back from his hike?
Soon, I hope. Those rocks get awful slippery when they're wet.
Oh my God, is that blood?
Yeah, I cut myself chopping wood.
What's that?
A shovel?
With fresh dirt on it. Why is there fresh dirt?
Damn it, Carlos. What did you do to Andrew?
What are you talking about?
Don't pretend.
We know he came clean about your mother.
My mother?
It was an accident. He didn't mean to run her over. You should blame me. I'm the one who helped him get rid of the car.
Damn, read the room, ladies.
Yeah, read the room.
Clearly, he hadn't said anything.
Well, yeah, because he was so confused. Even when Gabby mentioned mother and Carlos was like, my mother?
Like, what the fuck?
But yeah, it's also made worse, literally, by the fact that Gabby says, damn it, Carlos, what did you do to Andrew?
Yeah.
You might as well just say, where'd you bury the body by this point?
Yeah, I think poor Carlos, he must have felt really confused as to why these ladies are coming in accusing him of murder.
This is when Andrew walks through the door. Things get heated with Carlos going for Andrew and Bree stepping in front, warning everyone that she has a gun, which she then left in the car. Which she also warns everyone about.
You didn't have to mention that you left it in the car, Bree.
Yeah, I know. You could just say, I have a gun, and nobody would be any the wiser. It is you, Bree.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she probably has guns on her most of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, she doesn't. We know that. She's a safety queen. But it wouldn't go past the realms of possibility to assume that she may have a gun on her somewhere.
Yeah. This is when a ranger comes in to warn everyone that a tree is now blocking the road and no one can leave until morning.
Hilarious timing.
It's sod's law, obviously.
Such sitcom timing.
So they're all trapped in this cabin, rain pouring down.
It's very tense.
It is very tense. And the awkwardness is broken by Carlos talking about his mum's funeral and how Bree and Andrew were there. Bree explains that it was very awkward, which doesn't go down well with Carlos. And then Gabby tries to change the subject to hunger, and this is when Carlos pulls out his booze, claiming that that's all the food that he needs.
Yeah, oh, awkward. Yeah. Even more awkward.
Bree then asks Carlos to put it away, because Andrew's still fighting his alcoholism, and so then, instead of putting it away, he offers it to Andrew, which he turns down. Andrew does turn it down. He's strong. He's a strong lad. So Carlos makes it clear that he isn't really going to take no for an answer because they're going to be drinking to Mama Solis.
Yeah, what, you're going to run her over and then disrespect her memory?
Yeah. It's not a good look for Carlos. Obviously, I appreciate he's having to come to terms with a lot of information very rapidly, and you're having to now spend the night with the very person that murdered your mum.
Yeah, it's almost a villainous moment, but you can understand it.
Yeah. Bree steps up and tells Carlos to stop and think about the years of friendship, and then Carlos decides to just kind of roast Bree instead. He decides he wants baked Bree.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's just like, friendship, you've been so high and mighty on this lane, and all this entire time, you've been there hiding a murderer. He's like, you sick, twisted, evil bitch.
Yes, it was great.
It was so much fun. Andrew then defends his mum, telling Carlos to be mad at him, not the people who knew about it. So then Carlos questions the word people, but it doesn't take him long to figure out that Gabby knew about this as well.
Yeah, accidentally outing Gabby right there. Oh my God.
Gabby then tells Carlos to let it go. Because it's ancient history by this point. But he can't, and he leaves the cabin into the storm, claiming that he just can't be around you people.
Let it go, Gabby.
I mean, it is his mum. It's easy for Gabby to say let it go when she doesn't like the woman.
I know. It's like, let it go.
I'm with Gabby.
Poor choice of words.
I'm like, come on, it was like 10 years ago, Carlos.
Yeah, for someone that, just... like, no one even liked her.
Yeah. Next morning, Gabby, Bree, and Andrew arrive home with Carlos missing after walking out of the cabin. Lee storms out, mad at Gabby for leaving her kids with him longer than she told him she would. And he also divulges that Carlos had called and asked him to watch the girls for a little while longer whilst he went to his mother's grave. Carlos is found at his mother's crypt, not grave. I thought it was grave. No, it's a massive crypt.
I think I remember the crypt being in talks, actually, because I feel like Gabby was trying to tell him it's a bit much. In a previous season, and he's like,
I think in season two, and he said nothing is as good.
Nothing less is too for Mama good. Solis. Or
yeah,
something.
Nothing is too good for Mama Solis or something. Oh my God, I remember that.
So yeah, nice little continuity continuation of the crypt.
Loving the continuity, yeah. So Andrew and Bree apologize, but Andrew stops his mum from making more excuses for him and tells her to go wait in the car, as this is between Gabby and Carlos.
Yeah. No, this is Andrew and Carlos.
Oh yes. Yeah. It's between him and Carlos. Yeah. Gabby then decides to take this moment to leave them to it, and she takes Bree and goes off with her. Andrew tells Carlos to do whatever it takes to make this right, you know, call the police, whatever. And Bree and Gabby watch from a distance as Bree tells her that she's very proud of her son.
Yeah, it was a nice moment because she's probably so used to having to make excuses and be there defending her children because they've been so immature for most of their lives. So for Andrew to just be like, can you just go away and let me actually take responsibility for a change?
Yeah.
It's a nice moment.
It is a really nice moment.
I was proud too.
I was. It was a really nice full circle moment for Andrew on such a historic storyline that kind of got left unanswered. Like, obviously they got rid of the car, and they all just kind of went on with their lives, and Juanita Solis kind of didn't really get brought up again for the Vanderkamps.
Yeah, there's a lot of callbacks to earlier seasons now. Also, as proud as I am of him, I do feel a bit bad for Bree, considering that she did lose her husband and her marriage over this, only for it to all come out anyway.
That's true, yeah. She literally did not want it to get out, so she kept it all quiet and Orson left her for it.
Yeah. The disillusionment of her marriage was caused because she didn't want this to happen, and it's happened.
Yeah.
But it was with Orson, so who cares?
Yeah. So anyway, we move to the ending of the episode now. We end with Mary Alice talking about how we need to apologise for the mistakes that we make and then move on. And we see Tom coming home with flowers for Lynette.
Uh-oh, Carlos' behaviour.
Yeah. Felicia and Paul acknowledging each other in the street. And Bree and Andrew baking together because Bree's baking muffins to give to Carlos. And then Bree goes over to Gabby and Carlos's to thank him for forgiving Andrew. And she asks if she can come in, but Carlos tells Bree to go to hell. he hasn't forgiven her, and they're no longer friends. And nor is Bree and Gabby.
You can't speak for me.
I just did.
Yeah.
And the sadness in Gabby's eyes when Carlos tells her that they aren't friends. Mm-hmm. Like, no parties, no poker, no hellos in the street.
Yeah.
And then you just see Gabby and Bree kind of look at each other from, you know, both sides of the Carlos fence.
The door.
Yeah.
Through the door. It was hilarious.
And then, yeah, it got really overdramatic when Carlos slams the door and then Gabby walks up to the little window in the door and stares through at Bree. And it was so overdramatic.
Yeah. But, you know, he's right. Andrew was a kid. She was an adult. And she should have done something or known better. So, kudos to Carlos, really.
He should have.
I didn't like him speaking for Gabby in such a way. I was like, that's villainous. But then again, I was like, well, Gabby, if you're not all for it, I would divorce you.
Yeah, I mean...
I would not be happy with my partner being friends with the person that kept that a secret about my mum. Oh,
Yeah, no, I think there is a line that needs to be drawn at some point. And I do think that continuing a friendship with someone that helped cover up the murder of my mother is probably one of those lines.
Yeah, I think so. I don't have that many lines, but that's just one that you can't cross.
No,
you
know? No, exactly. So, yeah, I don't necessarily believe that Carlos should be speaking for Gabby in that sense. But I do think that if I was in Carlos's position, I wouldn't speak for you, but I would be watching how you behave.
Oh, yeah, there would be expectations.
Yeah, and if those expectations aren't met, then I'm sorry, that speaks volumes for our relationship and it would be ended.
But what an ending.
Yeah.
And this leads to some really good moments.
Some really funny scenes. A scene that we've been waiting for ages. Yeah. I know a scene you've been waiting for ages.
What, the cake? The cake?
The pineapple upside down cake
the
scene.
The cake moment. Yeah.
So anyway, that is the episode. That's it. It's done.
Okay, so let's move on to our next segment where Joel is going to give us the gayest and the straightest moments, starting with the gayest moment. What do you have?
So my award for gayest moment it goes to the store employee that judged Lynette for what she was wearing.
Yeah, she really thought that she was that pretty woman store assistant, didn't she?
It's also just very gay to see something and immediately see yourself in a movie that is similar.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You saw how quickly we jumped to Pretty Woman. That's gay. That is very gay.
I didn't even like that film.
No, but you know, you really didn't.
Instantly, I was like, oh, a film reference.
Yeah.
And then what do you have for straightest moment?
My award for straightest moment. It goes to the cabin in the woods.
I am confused.
It goes to the cabin in the woods.
Why?
Because it's a cabin in the woods and a latrine and an axe. You couldn't get more straight than that. That cabin in the woods is straight.
You think that cabin in the woods type horror stuff is straight?
No, it's got nothing to do with horror.
Well, I don't know. The scenario.
I'm saying cabin in the woods with a latrine is very straight.
Oh, it's about the lack of plumbing.
It's about the lack of convenience. Okay, there are probably very few gay people out there that would be willing to camp with lack of convenience.
I really don't mind camping.
Yeah, I know you don't.
But I would love plumbing.
I mean, plumbing is a top tier invention. Yeah. Top tier invention by humans. You've got flip-flops that are like bottom tier and then plumbing that's right at that top.
Exactly.
And now we move on to B's awards for best and worst parent. So who do you have for the best?
My award for...
best parent of the episode.
I gave this to Carlos as the surrogate father of Andrew for forgiving him for that terrible mistake he made at 16, despite being a very angry and emotional man at the best of times.
Yes. Yeah, true.
And as someone that isn't a very angry and emotional man in the way that Carlos is at all, I don't even know if I could have forgiven him.
Yeah, I do think it takes a big person to be able to just acknowledge that is not the person that you're looking at now.
Yes.
And move forward. I do think that's it takes a very big person.
Yeah, acknowledging that growth in Andrew.
Yeah.
Beast.
Yes. And who do you have for the worst?
My award for...
worst parent of the episode.
Goes to Bree for outing Andrew as the guy who killed Carlos's mother to him.
Yeah, she really did out him in the end, didn't she?
Yeah, she didn't even give him a chance to say it himself, which she didn't want. But she just outed it.
Yeah, all that fighting for Andrew to not do it. She did that just because she wanted to do it.
She did it herself.
Yeah.
I know she didn't mean to, but that was such a... oh, that was a dumb moment for Miss Bree.
It was a dumb moment, yeah.
So, sorry, but Bree, that goes to you. I mean, you could have got him axe murdered.
Yeah, well, they all would have got axe murdered.
Yeah, well, they didn't.
No, they didn't.
But luckily.
Yeah.
So, that was Season 7, Episode 18, Moments in the Woods. If anyone has any questions, queries, comments and theories, where can they find us?
You can find us on Instagram at Boyfriends Review. You can find us on TikTok at Boyfriends Review. And you can see us on...
Reddit,
thank you. I forgot the word then. You can see us on Reddit where we're often peddling our unsolicited opinions. And we are Boyfriends Review Pod.
We also have email, which is boyfriendsreview@outlook.com. And our artwork is done by our friend Louis, who you can find on Instagram at DocRedMarkDesign. And there's a link to his Etsy page where he does commissions. Join us next week when we'll be back in your ear holes with Season 7, Episode 19, The Lies Ill-Concealed.
Ooh, that's a nice title. I like that.
Yeah, the titles are great this season.
Yeah, they really are.
So, see you then.
Bye, guys.
Bye.